Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode number 97 of the Apolog Podcast. I'm your host, Simon Hebb. If you like what you're hearing here, why don't you head on over to patreon.com/apolog. And Patreon is a pledging website where it's better than GoFundMe, and it's a monthly pledging website where you can pledge as much or as little as you want on a monthly basis to help with hosting and gas fees. My hosting and my gas fees. It's a very helpful. I have four patrons that really help this show out tremendously. And I really appreciate those people jumping on. So you can pledge $1 a month. You can pledge $4 a month. You can pledge 10 or 40 or as much as you want. If you're some rich old crazy person and you like podcasts and you think, hey, this'd be funny, I'd give this guy $1,000 a month, then I could just quit my job. I just do podcasts full time. Anyways, today's podcast is brought to you in part by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/apolog. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Kindle, Android, or MP3 player, or other. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/apolog. See what they got there. There's tons of books, almost any other book. Like, well, isn't there only just 180,000 books in total, like in the world? I think that's all the books, is 180,000. So all the books are available on apolog.com. Oh, sorry, audibletrial.com/apolog. This podcast is also brought to you by Amazon. It is an affiliate program that I'm presently running. Go to apolog.ca and check the banners on the right side. There's one banner, and there's three little buttons: Canada, United States, or England. And you can shop on Amazon, but all you have to do is click on that link, bookmark the link, and every time you shop on Amazon, you go to that link, and then you will be supporting the show. It will cost you no extra money, and it's a very cool little system that I got going there, and it's very helpful. People do it. It's great. It's very cool. Inside Recorders. Inside Recorders helps you and your band with download codes. You need download codes to sell virtual copies of your album over the merchandise table. So if you're a band that plays out live, and you don't want to spend the money on CDs, and you want to spend it on beer, all you have to do is go to Inside Recorders and check out how it works. You need download codes. Download codes is basically a slip of paper, or you can use it for promotional purposes. If you're a band, you want to sell a t-shirt, you can attach your record to it with just a slip of paper. Go to Inside Recorders and check out more details. Contact me. Also, Inside Recorders deals with online mixing. You can send your recorded album to Inside Recorders. It'll get mixed and mastered and made for the, if you want to make a CD, we can make you a DDP, which is a system of how they make the CDs and how it's all indexed and all that crap. But let's face it, nobody makes CDs anymore. Everybody gets download codes. Hey, download codes. How about that? Go to apolog.ca/shop, and you can pre-order the new acoustic album and this new thing I'm working on really soon with some cool people. I can't tell you who it is. You can buy a t-shirt. T-shirts are running out. You buy the Foursquare discography for $20. It's over 70 songs for $20. Like the show on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/apologpod. Follow me on Twitter at simonshead666. And thank you for listening to that. Today's guest is none other than Son of Dave. Son of Dave is a harmonica player. You might have heard him if you watched this show, The Preacher. He has the theme song for The Preacher. He's also been on the Breaking Bad soundtracks. He used to be in a band called Crash Test Dummies, but don't talk to him about that because he'll get angry. So I wasn't allowed to. But I could say it now because he's not here. He's somewhere in Winnipeg or England right now. So Son of Dave, it was an interesting conversation. Sometimes you get these interviews and people don't really like to be interviewed. But I think we kind of broke through some walls and we had a good chat. And ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce to you Son of Dave on the Apolog Podcast. What got you into blues? So at being from Winnipeg, the center of Canada and all.
Yeah, the blues, as we all know, was invented in Germany with the invention of the harmonica.
Mm-hmm.
and then it was imported into the southern United States, where it rapidly made its way up to Winnipeg via a riverboat.
The short A to B, right up the Red River, right?
Yeah, right up your Red River. The Winnipeg is a more serious, slightly more serious answer is that there are some old players here. They're still going, and they're world class. They don't try to tour the world. They're happy to play here every weekend. Mm-hmm. They're real jobbers, you know, working class bluesmen. I heard them when I was young, but specifically what got me into playing that harmonica, which I had one that was given to me by God or Santa Claus. I'm not sure which. But what got me into it was seeing James Cotton play the damn thing at the Winnipeg Folk Festival under the stars, a few thousand people completely hypnotized.
How old were you?
And boogieing. 12, 13.
Really?
Yeah, and I understood what the harmonica could do then. I was just amazed. Of course, he's one of the greatest. He's still my favorite, his Creeper, if you know that thing. Incredible. Incredible jam.
Yeah.
And he must have had, I'm pretty sure he must have had the Mad Guitar Murphy with him and other of the Stax lineup at that time, because that's who he used for the record around that time. So it was an amazing, amazing band with great brass. They weren't just doing old time blues, even much Chicago blues. They were pulling a lot of soul numbers, and like he did on this album, 100% Cotton is an incredible record.
Okay, cool. You see, I must admit, I'm not a blues expert, and I appreciate honesty in music, and I hear a lot more honesty in blues than I hear in obviously in popular music today. So that's a good thing. Is there bad blues out there? I guess that's a kind of a weird question, but is there such a thing as bad processed blues?
Bad processed blues.
Something trying to be something, but they're not. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I'm just asking the question wrong.
I guess there's the worst of any genre is pretty damn bad.
So, I mean, like, there was a thing that was called, like, Blue Eyed Soul and stuff like that, like the Huey Lewis's and the, and such of the, even some Eric Clapton had a bit of it going on. But, I mean, do you accept that? Like, is that sort of a thing? I don't want you to call it Huey Lewis, but I mean, do you accept that kind of music as being part of a genre that blood and sweat was created on?
There are some mutants, or definitely some unwanteds that are out there making noise every Friday or Sunday night at the blues jams. Mm-hmm. One appalling thing is the phenomenon of the blues hammer, a band that just tries to play blues heavier than anyone else.
It's
a phenomenon. There's one in every town. We are Blues Hammer, and they just
that's the band. And they, that was a great and name they just, for a band though.
They smash away at their drums, and they scream the lyrics, and they wail away on their guitar solos for much too long. They're at every blues festival, and it's always there. So there's the Blues Hammer, and that's one of the characters in this rubbish soap opera we call the blues, and another character is the then there's the sort of museum custodians.
Oh.
And they have the perfectly ironed 1950s Hawaiian shirt or perfect and baggy trousers and suspenders and hat, and they have all the gear and everything is absolutely perfect.
To
look at, but the
delivery is never quite realized.
They sound like a museum piece. They're doing everything right.
Yeah,
but it tends to be very too tidy.
Yeah,
and a little bit boring, and you worry because they'll never break a sweat.
Would you rather see a Blues Hammer, or would you rather see the tidy, nice trousers? Like, if you had a choice, like if you had to go to hell, and your choice was either listen to Blues Hammer or baggy pants,
or the Blues curators, yeah, or the custodians of the Blues. It's a hard thing, and neither.
You're in hell. You have to choose one.
Yeah, you have to hell. There's more than two options in hell.
Yeah, well, that's your hell. I get to choose your hell. My hell would be to be at a country festival where I had to constantly count backwards hats or cowboy hats, because that's what country festivals are now. We have a game. we're getting driven to the hotel because I tour manage a country band. They're a great band. They're great people. But every time we leave, it's always like drunk folks down some country road. And there's either like a cowboy hat or a backwards hat. And we bet in the minivan way to the hotel, like, how many hats? Let's do it, like, you know, over unders. Usually
what's
the cowboy
backwards hat? Is that a baseball cap around backwards?
Backwards baseball
Ooh.
Cap. And we actually don't even count. We don't count the frontwards baseball hats because there's too many of those. So they always win.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny because their neck is already red. That baseball cap is not going to protect it, really.
Figuratively and literally, it's red. That's right. Well, you know, it is hot out there in them country festivals and things as such. And do you make it over here much to play? I know you're coming over here in within the month or two. So, but do you kind of, is this a thing for you to, are you a traveling musician these days, or is this a new inventive thing for you?
I've made my living at this for 18 years or something, being a solo gigging artiste.
And coming over here though, is that a thing, or do you usually stay over in Europe?
I've done over 1,000 shows, but I haven't done many of them in Canada. No, it's rare that I do a tour in Canada because it's damn expensive to come over here.
Yep.
And of course, when I'm back, I need to be visiting family and trying to patch up some old some unfinished business. So I bring some family of mine along with me. So it's difficult. This time I'm turning it into a tour. I've said I'm not going to. I've promised myself a very unrelaxing holiday, which leads right into a tour. So it's full of shameless self promotion and technical glitches like we're having today.
Yeah.
And it'll lead into a tour. But I haven't done a bunch of shows in Canada in 8 years or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well,
I have two UK tours a year at least.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of shows in France. Yeah. And then there are forays into other European countries and then a sudden dash across the globe somewhere else random. My God, I did a show in Lebanon, a couple of years ago.
Wow.
The invitation comes and I jump at it.
That's amazing. Yeah. I truly think though where you're at in England and in Europe in general is, I think, more acceptance of musical genres and styles, and there's not a lot of judging going on. So there's acceptance. Does that make sense? I mean, Canada sort of has always had, I guess, image-based TV videos. It's coming back again, you know, and you got to kind of be 21 and good looking to kind of make it in North America. I don't see that in Europe a lot. Not to say that you're not a stunningly good looking man.
Yeah. And not to say that I've made it in any way.
Made it. I was 60. See, if you saw it, I had the quotes, air quotes going on.
There's definitely an open mind to, all sorts of twists of genres and things in the UK. Mm-hmm. Even in smaller cities and smaller places, that it's they've been doing the melting pot for a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very open musically. They're passionate and they like things to be mixed and screwed around. The French also, maybe less in the smaller towns, but the French have been supporting of all sorts of musics. They have such great funding, great festivals.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and all kinds.
That's very cool. I'm for some reason now my computer is starting to play your voice. This is strange. Are you still on the internet part of it? There you are. I see you.
It just woke up. Let
me mute you there.
Computer just woke up.
There you go. See now, actually, now I can see your face now, so I can see whether or not you're happy with the interview. So now, so if you do frowny face, then it's like, it's not going good. It's not going good. But I see you now. It might go away. It might come back. Yeah, France. Because I've been a few times to Europe playing music, and I found that like with like the music I play is sort of Germany, Italy, not so much France for some reason. Like the sort of 90s punk rock stuff. They don't really dig that as much. They seem to mock it. Or it could just be me.
Did the French mock German 90s punk? I found a few repro discs over there. I found the good Black Flag EP.
Mm-hmm.
I found that in a little French vinyl shop.
Mm-hmm.
I found a couple of old Sex Pistols.
Yeah,
That's
the good 45. Punk rock though. That's the good stuff. We played the mediocre, not like late Husker Du, early Sugar, Sam I Am, Foo Fighters, what became, you know, that sort of stuff. And we opened up for a band called 10 Foot Pole, and they didn't really like us much, the French. But I'm okay with that. The French. It was a fun trip though. But I mean, sort of back to you. Let's not make this about me. So you're born in Winnipeg, right? Are you born in Winnipeg or did you move there as a
born in Winnipeg?
Yeah.
That's correct. Born in Winnipeg.
I lived there for a little bit. Back to me. No, I was there in the early 90s actually. I joined a band called Red Fisher. So I lived out there for a little while. And it's a neat town, and I've been back there a few times before. And you know, you coming back from, I guess, 8 years, do you notice a difference in Winnipeg to what it was like? Like, do you lament the old days of Winnipeg, or is it stronger and more vibrant than ever?
Winnipeg is special. I try to play a show here every couple of years at least. Mm-hmm. So I haven't toured Canada, but when I'm back, I sometimes do a show here. And I try to get back once a year because, as I say, I've got a lot of family here and mm-hmm. Some on Vancouver Island. Which is why I'm playing a little show in Duncan on this tour. So, do I lament the old days? Not at all. I think there are a lot of great new things that have popped up and improvements to the city. It's really caught up to pace with other places. It used to be a bit, for sure, backwards and cut off.
Mm-hmm.
It's always had a very progressive sort of artistic or alternative, however you want to put it. It's always had some fantastic freaks, some really turned on and worldly people.
Yeah,
coming out of here. But
I noticed the community was stronger within Winnipeg, whether it be groups would stick together more. I mean, when I grew up in Toronto, in the Toronto area, and I noticed that because it was a big city that it would be tough to get your crew together. So it was so your friends would support each other and things. And I found Winnipeg and Regina and Saskatchewan and just in general, basically being kind of isolated socially, that there was more to stick together for.
Yeah. Well, you can't get rid of them.
Yeah.
Here.
Yes.
You're going to run into them.
Yeah. So even bands like, I don't know, like two bands, like if you put a band like Red Fisher and a band like Propaganda together, they're two completely musical tastes, but stuck together and were friends and still friends, you know. So that's a true testament to the people. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. I think I'm recognizing some names now, but it rings old bells, old, broken old bells in this belfry.
What took you out to England? Was it do you have family out there, or is it just sort of like, I got to get out of Canada?
It was a big move that my old band made to get out of Canada and have just try at something bigger. I stayed. The others moved back to Canada or the United States. Mm-hmm. I was hooked, though. I loved it.
Well, definitely with blues and stuff. There's such a strong history of blues. And are you
okay? Now you're pushing me to breaking point. Enough about this blues crap.
Sorry.
I don't play the blues circuit. I really don't. No? I play clubs and festivals that music lovers go to. I have one in every 30 gigs might be a blues oriented gig.
Mm.
I just don't do it. I play cool stuff, and then that's that. The blues circuit is I love it as a consumer,
mm-hmm.
but but they have a hard time with what I do. They do.
Well, same with Celtic people and Ashley MacIsaac, because he's kind of out there as well, but he's still, you know what I mean? But I mean, that's, do you enjoy the fact that you're on the outside of that and you're on the periphery rather than a part of the scene? Do you enjoy to not be part of that scene? Is that something that you?
It's a chicken and egg question, because I make my living by playing to all sorts of people. I get a very wide mix of audience.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoy just showing up and playing outside of a particular genre or community.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do a lot of blues gigs.
Hmm.
And that's that. But I'm always happy to go and do a blues festival in the Netherlands, or a harmonica workshop down in Brighton.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be doing in the new year, it looks like I'll be doing sort of a traveling kind of blues road show in the United States with a lot of the great harmonica players. We're struggling to put that together now. I've got to do some, get my music union, pay my music union dues, get those up to date, and look at getting a visa to work down there, but
that's expensive.
But that'll be back on the a blue circuit, which mm-hmm. would be very, very, very. I've never done anything like that before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually like 7 blues shows in a row. Mm-hmm. It's just not what I do.
Maybe Blues Hammer will be playing.
Pardon me?
Maybe Blues Hammer will be playing.
They've got better filters than that. But so I'm not worried. I've looked at the name of the other people in the bill, and they're geniuses. They're wonderful.
So
there's going to be Mark Hump and Jason Ritchie and Howard Levy. He was in Bella Fleck and the Flecktones, if you remember. Howard Levy, harmonica genius.
What do you think of today's technology when it comes to pushing yourself out there? Is this, are you into this kind of stuff? Is interviews are fun, right? But the whole new process about doing it, it's not.
Yeah, I've had to give myself up to it. They came in and they installed cameras all over my ranch. There's hardly anywhere I can go that isn't on film.
What part of England do you live from? Live in, anyways.
My ranch is in London.
You have a ranch in London? Is it a sizable plot of land?
Milkmaids, the whole bit.
Oh, that's the thing. Is that the thing, that the little elevator that goes up in the middle of the ranch? No, that's called something else. Never mind. That's not the little.
That's weird. You're talking about a dumbwaiter.
Dumbwaiter, not a milkmaid. Yeah. Do you have
it? Yeah, no.
So, so London.
Oh, there it goes again.
Well, there you go. Oh, you cut out. You have a great look on your face right now. Oh, it's gone. Do you, so when you're in, like, you're in your ranch in London, so music is the thing that sort of drives you forward, but do you find that, is there any other loves that you like to do, like do interviews on podcasts or, paint? Is there anything that keeps you artistically satisfied?
I wish I had time.
Mm-hmm.
But no, this, if it isn't actually doing shows, you know, I have sort of average a couple a week all year. Of course, sometimes there are no shows, and then I have 14 in a row, but sort of an average of a couple shows a week. So it's, you know, like between 50 and 100 shows a year. And then it takes up all the bloody shameless self-promotion. It takes you up the other part of the time.
Yeah.
And recording, you know, I'm always making a record, as you have to do. So there's plenty of that. So it's a full-time job for sure.
Yeah.
The other, you know, between you and me, I'm a family man.
Yeah.
So that takes up any free time that I have.
Yeah.
Artistic endeavors. I still meaning to actually sit down and learn the piano, or stand up and learn the piano. I just don't have the time to do it yet.
Yeah.
I will.
And the recording process, when you record albums, do you find it easier than it was back in the old time of old, where, you know, you had to pay for recording studio? Like I think things have come a long way and records sound better. I think that's a good thing about technology.
Records sound a lot better if you want them to. Yeah, you can make them sound quite nice.
Well, I mean, you can still go for the one take approach. There's a guy over here, Ron Hawkins from Lowest of Low, that recorded a whole album basically in one take. Well, and he actually runs his Pro Tools session in destructive mode, so he never keeps what he's recorded. So there's his process is treated like a tape machine. But because everything just sounds better, you know, with speaker technology and electronics and all these things, it's just much easier to do now.
I think you're right. The albums ago, the Shake a Bone album I made with Steve Albini in Chicago.
Oh, he's great.
We made that pretty much live off the floor to tape. Certainly no Pro Tools involved. Just recording to tape. I did a few overdubs. Like some of the percussion it was better to put over top so it wouldn't bleed into the vocal mic, and so that I could just concentrate on it a little more. Mm-hmm. But it was mostly live off the floor, that whole record, just what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Just to say this is what Son of Dave does in a concert or anywhere else. So
yeah,
that's what I do. This the record right now that I'm touting is Explosive Hits. And it's a mix. I did some overdubs. I did some live off the floor recordings and stuff. But it's some of it's stripped down one man band. Some has I've tarted it up a little. And then I've made other records that with very full production with the drummers and the doo wop girls and saxophones, the whole schwa bang.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
It's fun to keep challenging myself or challenging my budget and making another. keep them guessing.
Well,
I'm getting into it. I'll be putting out, much to the horror of much to my own horror and the horror of many of the Son of Dave fans. I'll be putting out some techno blues in the next six months.
Well, Neil Young had his Tron, right? So it's your Tron.
That's right.
You tried to squeak it by there with Mr. Soul. And you tried to say, come along for this ride. And everybody's like, what? So you're doing techno. That's cool. I mean, there's no problem with that. It's how you deliver it, right?
Yeah. And I'll just have to serve it up with a caveat. I'll have disclaimers. Caveats.
Refunds offered.
Yeah, run, and refunds offered. That sort of thing. That's right.
Yeah, if you don't like this in 30 days, bring it back. take it back with a no questions asked guarantee. That'd be cool. That's right. There's a marketing plan right there. You could do it like you do steak knives, like on TV. You know, here it is, this crazy record. So are you working with somebody to do that, or are you just sort of trying to do it yourself? Like, who are you collaborating with?
Good Lord, no. No, I don't. That's not something I want to do at all. Is stare at a screen to make the music. I used to try to do that, and even demoing sometimes, I stare at the screens and move things about. Mm-hmm. So it leads me down the wrong path.
Sounds like somebody pitched you the idea, and you said, "Hey, that sounds like fun."
No, I met a guy that was doing it, doing this specifically, kind of a techno blues genre, and he did ask me to play on something of his. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, no, this is the right guy to make more with. So writing.
So it sounds like this is me. Maybe I'm sort of projecting, but it sounds like you challenge your audience. You ask your audience to come along for the ride, or not. Am I right, or am I completely off base?
I have to. It's a combination of challenging the audience I have and finding ways to creep through to new people. Uh-huh. And God damn it, you just always have to have some new release to talk about. Or they won't give you gigs. Or they won't give you gigs. It's a matter of, you know, promoters saying, Son of Davey's been through our town. He's been through our town 5 times. Why should we have him back again? Well, they do have me back because they know that I can help sell a lot of booze.
Yeah.
And bring a lot of people out to a gig, but they also want something to talk about. Son of Dave's back with his next album. Son of Dave's back with his a fresh 45. Son of Dave's back with him. Who knows what I can sure. If I can come back. I'm hoping for my own perfume. I'll have to do that eventually.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah. What would the scent, the essence be? Because that's sense, right? Essence. It's an essence of Son of Dave.
Yeah. It's meld, I think. It has to be pronounced in a French way, but maybe meld.
It should smell like the back room of a club somewhere. In a good way, though. In a good way. And then people will be like, oh, this is what the real experience is. And it's your essence. I think that's a good idea. I don't know. I don't think perfume's a good. I think you should make more records. I think that's probably an idea. You know, the reason I asked why you challenge, because it sounds like you sort of go off in a direction and then it's sort of like you just. I like the fact that you're just sort of doing it because it's what you want to do. But I also feel that you're sort of asking the audience to either accept or not accept. And I like that because that's honest, because you're giving them the chance. You know, there's no agenda of, like you say, I think you're saying put out an album every other year or every year, otherwise nobody will talk to you. That's a bad situation to be in, right?
That's right.
But you want to always put new and exciting records out. But do you ever get to the point where it's like, I've done all I can do right now. You got to wait for that sort of reservoir to fill back up again. Or are you always writing?
I don't understand the question.
When you're coming to writing music, are you inspired to write music and then you keep, or do you take breaks to become inspired to write music? Maybe that's also a bad way of asking the question.
The breaks, I just don't have time to go into a writing mode.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes. So I put out a record, go and tour it, and then by the time that's done, I'm ready to write again. I never have a problem writing with this shtick that I do, which is to shove a beat down onto make up a beat with a rhythm with my lips, mm-hmm. put it into a loop machine and start humming bass lines or playing harmonica over top of it. Every time I do it, something sort of cookie or fun comes out. So there's never a problem of, I've never had a writer's block.
Mm-hmm. And this tour you're doing is going to be with a looping machine in you, or are you bringing a band out with you?
Always looping machine. I'm always solo.
Yeah.
Beatbox, cheatbox.
What's the, actually, if we get technical, what do you use for looping? Because some people use this Line 6 thing, and there's other things that people use. Like, what do you use for your live show?
I think for 10 or 12 years, I was using an Akai head rush, which is just, there's two buttons on it. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Lately, I moved over to a big, bloody, ugly, complicated pedal that has a looper that has three channels on it. And I find I can do different chorus that is in a totally different key to the other sections of the song. So it allows for more chord progressions and trickery.
Trickery. Would you be considered like a technical person when it comes to doing, putting on a show? Or, I mean, is it a, what's your approach? Is it that technology serves your needs, or do you like to like express through technology?
My left foot is quite technologically advanced. The rest of it is pretty pretty backwards. I'm shaking a rattle, stomping, and shouting harmonica. But the left foot works some buttons.
Do you sit?
To capture
and,
it.
Do you sit and play, or are you sitting and playing, or are you standing? Because that's hard stuff to
do. I sit, stand, and whenever I can, I make a quick dash across the stage
for effect.
Sometimes I fall off the chair.
Tim Finn took a solo record out where he actually put a snare on a kick pedal, and then he could get like a kick and a snare progression going with the two kick pedals. I thought that was kind of a neat approach.
Fantastic, yeah. I love that. I've thought many times about getting rid of beatbox and looping and just having some drums at my feet. But right away, I can't. Unless I were to make suitcase drums or something small like that, then we're looking at driving to shows, which I don't want to do. I take the train. I take the train, and that's how I get around so much, usually.
You going to do that in Canada? You train it in Canada, or are you going to get a car?
I'll have to have a bloody car, because our trains
suck
and hardly work. But I think I'll be all right between Toronto, Ottawa, and Montreal.
Yes, definitely. That's true. I've never taken the train across Canada. I want to one day, but I also want to do more than 100 kilometers an hour. That would be nice.
Yeah.
Because our train system is just garbage here. After going to Europe and being on a real train that goes 200 kilometers an hour, now you're getting somewhere.
Yeah, I get all over on the train. It's brilliant.
It's pretty affordable too, right? Because if you travel, you just buy a pass for the month or whatever. Isn't that how that works still?
In some countries, yeah. Yeah. Not in the UK. As one person, it's affordable. Wouldn't want to put a whole band on there.
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I was in Italy and I had to get to Germany. I thought, and I had four people. I thought, we'll take an overnight train. I was like, nah, it's going to be like 800 euros. I'm like, maybe we'll drive.
Germany's expensive, yeah.
Yeah.
The trains are a bit more expensive in Germany. Yeah. How your readers and listeners must be fascinated by this conversation.
This is what it's all about, this whole show.
it's the fucking gasoline oil industry and the automobile industry that crushed the trains in North America.
Yeah.
Sort of subsidizing and forcing Greyhound bus transportation in the early days.
Yeah.
And then ripping up all the trams. All the cities had trams in them, didn't they?
Yeah.
Streetcars.
Yeah. And, Toronto still
which
got
was
them.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. One of the few cities that still has them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a brilliant and very low low carbon emissions and a very affordable way to get around. But they just ripped them up in the interest of selling buses, cars, and petrol, building highways. And they've fucked themselves.
Oh,
people have to take cars or airplanes to get from one city to another. Now, the long distances in Canada, I mean, it's a long way, and flying makes you could be 10 hours on a train or a couple hours in the airplane.
Yeah.
So a really long distance, I understand a train can be out of the question. Mm-hmm. But really connecting between all the on southern Ontario cities should be a no-brainer. It should all be hooked up by rail, and even within Alberta, even across the prairies, should be able to take a train and in 6 hours be in from Winnipeg to Regina should be doable in 6 hours, shouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. A friend of mine did a documentary on how Canada privatized the CP Rail, privatized and took all the rails out, especially the ones that headed north and south from the main lines, and put logging truck roads, because the logging trucks were apparently cheaper when it was a short-term gain and a long-term loss. And that is how we've been losing our train system. And then Canada's built on the train, right? Like how we built our tracks from one side, and then they built in the middle and all this stuff. And there's that famous picture. It doesn't make sense anymore. I mean,
there's one on Vancouver Island that goes, in the morning, it goes up island. Mm-hmm. And then I think at night it comes down. Counterintuitive for people that want to work in Victoria. Mm-hmm. And the thing honestly moves it 5 miles per hour. To complete antique. Useless. And how can this just be still creeping along in the dark ages?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's one thing. And the other thing, I think Europe has such expensive fuel. So I think it sort of does help the process along about creating electric train lines and things like that, because
we could do really well over here, because rather than refining the tar sands, we could just shovel them into the engine.
Yeah, it's true.
When I steam train.
Have guys in there. Yeah, you know, I think you're on something there. They have to wear funny hats, though. They have to wear the hats. And they can only do 5 kilometers an hour, unless they're in Back to the Future, in which they have to do 88.8 kilometers miles an hour, and then they'll go through time. This is cool. I think we should talk about this tour. We talked a little bit about it, but I think there's going to be a lot of people appreciating you making that trip, because it's a long trip from England to come in and play in our fair country. It takes a lot of work, it takes a lot of money, and I want a lot of people to go out and see your show. And I didn't see if you're playing Toronto. Are you playing Toronto?
I'm playing at the Rivoli.
Rivoli. Oh, I love the Rivoli. Rivoli's great. Well, okay. Well, you know what I'll do? I have all the
Gary
notes
Top.
And everything. Gary Top's doing the show?
Gary Top presents, yeah.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Okay. I have all the dates and everything, and I'll just, at the start, I'll just say all the dates that you're playing. And I have the music. I found it. So we'll play a song at the start and the end of this, if that's okay. And this has been fun. I don't know. I feel like, I hope, are you okay with it? Is this okay?
Say again?
Are you okay with the, did this go okay with you?
This interview?
Yeah. Give me a rating.
The only thing that was holding it back was my laptop cutting out.
Oh, that's okay. I mean,
but otherwise, sure, I'll give you a triple A rating.
Okay, cool. Because I've been counting the words blues, and I think you've said it more than me now.
Oh, you bastard! you tricked me into it. It drives people away.
You think? Really? I don't know.
Totally.
It gives people like a basis, like people like me that go, oh, I can associate this with something, and then when you say Steve Albini, I'm like, oh, no, this is a whole other level. Because if somebody like Steve Albini is working with you, then he is a magical wizard when it comes to creating music and things, you know, so.
Yeah.
So
I've had tunes, you know, you can bring people in by saying that I've had a tune play in Breaking Bad and in the new series Preacher.
Yeah.
I don't do a blues crowd, so, you know, you got to have to remind people that, otherwise they won't come to they don't want to come to a blues show, young people especially.
Yeah, just say it doesn't sound like
you. I don't want to lose blues lovers are part of my bread and butter.
Yeah.
I don't want to offend anybody, but you know, it's a general audience. There's all kinds of freaks that come.
Yeah, and well, I think that's good. If there's a lot of, like, you're right, any type of music, there's a style that ruins the fact, like pop music, right? Think of pop music. There's popular music. Well, why is it popular? Because people like it. Well, I don't like it, you know what I mean? But that gives it the stigma of being pop, you know? So I see what you're saying, you know, and I and after listening, because 8 records, right? This hasn't just really just sort of fallen, you know what I mean? Like, you've worked very hard at this. So.
Yeah. Whether it ultimately matters at all, we don't know. I'll find out in the end on the judgment day.
Well, you know, that's true. That's very good for your career. It's when you do die in either a fiery helicopter wreck. It's got to be a helicopter because it's more traumatic. Planes are like, meh, you know, but helicopters.
Train. I hope mine's a train wreck.
Train wreck. That's what I call every day at my work is a train wreck.
Yeah, it's a train wreck.
Oh, man. Yeah, I was up till 2 in the morning working a beauty pageant. So
I was also working very hard at 2 in the morning.
Were you? Playing some music.
I was cleaning some old 78s.
Oh.
My friend came across a stack of 78 records. And this is not something you find in the prairies in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
It's all R&B. The labels are like old Hollywood R&B labels. So talking at Hollywood and Chicago labels, Chess, Checker Records, on the Hollywood labels are Aladdin and Federal. Unbelievable from Delta Blues to rock and roll. It's all R&B, all post swing, so no swing records. It's wow. Really rare to find this stuff. It's not the big names were, you know, HMV's Master's Voice and Decca, and that's the stuff you find in junk shops.
Mm-hmm.
and antique shops in Canada. But this stuff was all. Lots of stuff on Specialty as well, you know, that label.
Yeah.
All of this fantastic old rhythm and blues.
And cleaning it is a process too, right? You don't want to, is it?
Yeah, well, I'm no audiophile, but I was, you know, you take a very mild soapy water and you go through, work through the grooves and get that crap out.
Yeah.
By the end, I had, I'd cleaned 20 or 30 records and played them all. Just fantastic music.
Amazing. There's a company in Chicago that could digitize that stuff and like capture the image of the disc and then recreate it digitally. I wonder, you know, seeing all these wax recordings, the cylinder recordings, and you're hearing it for the first time without any analog drag, like, no, you know, it's cool stuff. I mean, we're in a different world right now, you know, but finding, I guess, artifacts from the history, it needs to be documented, because in the end of it all, when all the lights are turned off, all we have is records. Records are the only thing we have that actually still make noise, you know?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Mind you, it helped when we put we put it through the stereo here. It was coming out of the gramophone, but it was very tinny.
Okay.
It helps to have a bit of electricity. I'm a big believer.
We all are, you know. But when they do...
I would never have a career without big bloody speakers making me sound enormous.
Somebody will figure something out. It'll be big megaphones like in the old-timey movie days where they just yell down these megaphones and they'll be just huge ones. That'll be the way it goes. I'm anticipating.
It could be. Or to give everyone in the audience some kind of ear horn.
It'd be the exact opposite. You're right. It'd be like a parabolic microphone. There'd be their ear with the big tube, the funnel, I mean, and then you yelling out of the tube, and it'll be like you speak to each individual person. See, now we're talking. Now we're talking.
Bluetooth right into their heads.
That's it. What we call blowtooth, because you're actually yelling through the tube. Blowtooth. There we go. There's new technology.
All right.
Well, son of Dave, I appreciate you coming on the show, and we could do this again. I think we'd do a better job. I think because now we can talk now. So we have this communication. When you come through Toronto, I'd like to maybe come and say hi and come hang out and maybe do this live.
Yeah, let's do that then.
I do a thing in my car where I actually record in my car, drive around, and people play.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, yeah. We drive. We almost hit bicyclers and joggers, and we talk about stuff, and but in the car. So I hope you could do that, because that's fun.
Sure. Or maybe we could just take a cab and do it in the back of the cab.
That's too much money. I got a car. I got my own car. I'm a man.
Ooh.
Thanks, man. Thanks for doing this.
Pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
Son of Dave, everybody. I got to ask him if his dad was actually Dave, because you may hear, like, watch, like, I don't know, The Hobbit. It's like Thorin, son of somebody, son of this, father that. I don't know, maybe that's how I got the name. Forgot to ask him, you know, but that's what, you know. That was fun, right? It was fun listening to the awkwardness in there in the middle. He started giving me crap about calling him a bluesman. It was fun. But, you know, like, that's why I wake up in the morning, to get ridiculed by, you know, people. Anyways, everybody, thanks for listening to this episode. Thanks for getting through it with me. Don't forget about Amazon. Go to appalog.ca and click on the banner on the right side from Canada, America, United States, or from the UK, and support the show that way. Come on, English people, pick it up. This is a thing called Amazon. You buy stuff online. It's pretty awesome. Okay, English people, get it together. Don't forget to pledge to the show on Patreon.com. PATREON.com. Patreon. And when you pledge on Patreon, you become a patron. And becoming a patron is a special little society, kind of like the Shriners and or the Stonemasons. Not really, but you can have fun by knowing you're supporting the show with my hosting fees and my gas fees. I got 4 patrons already, and it's pretty cool, but let's get more. If I get 400 patrons, I can quit my job. How about that? Inside Recorders, don't forget about that. Don't forget about appalog.ca/shop to buy a t-shirt. Pre-order an acoustic album and buy my Foursquare discography for $20. Facebook.com/appalogpod is the place to go get caught up on information. Sorry, I've been a little lackadaisical on the news. I've been on like a camping trip. I just got back. SimonHead666 to follow me on Twitter. That's all the bit. Next week, we'll see you next week. I don't know. I forget who's next week, but there's going to be a show next week, I promise you. Okay, so everybody, thanks so much for listening to the show. We'll see y'all again around the next time, and Omar.